At this time, I invite you to turn in your scriptures to the New Testament. One passage that is not listed here, but think it important for us to look at, is in Acts chapter 7. So let's turn to Acts chapter 7, and we'll look at verses 17 through verse 36. 17 through verse 36. And then we'll go from there to Hebrews chapter 11. This is a portion of Stephen's address. If you talk to one of our confirmation students, they'll be able to tell you that Stephen was the first martyr of the New Testament church, and that it was the Apostle Paul, who at that time was called Saul, who then led the charge for his stoning. So let us then give our attention to a portion of his address found here in Acts chapter 7. We read this: "But when the time of the promise drew near, which God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, till another king arose who did not know Joseph. This man dealt treacherously with our people and oppressed our forefathers, making them expose their babies so that they may not live. At this time Moses was born and was well pleasing to God, and he was brought up in his father's house for 3 months. But when he was sent out, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and brought him up as her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and deeds. Now when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended and avenged him who was oppressed and struck down the Egyptian. For he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand. But they did not understand. And the next day he appeared to two of them as they were fighting and tried to reconcile them, saying, 'Men, you are brethren, why do you wrong one another?' But he who did his neighbor wrong pushed him away, saying, 'Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you did the Egyptian yesterday?' Then at this saying, Moses fled and became a dweller in the land of Midian, where he had two sons. And when 40 years had passed, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire in a bush in the wilderness of Mount Sinai. When Moses saw it, he marveled at the sight. As he drew near to observe, the voice of the Lord came to him, saying, 'I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob.' And Moses trembled and dared not look. Then the Lord said to him, 'Take your sandals off, for the place where you stand is holy ground. I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their groaning and have come down to deliver them. And now come, I will send you to Egypt. This Moses, whom they rejected, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge?" is the very one that God sent to be a ruler and a deliverer by the hand of the angel who appeared to him in the bush. He brought them out after he had shown wonders and signs in the land of Egypt and in the Red Sea and in the wilderness 40 years. Then let's turn over to the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 11. And we want to look at the faith of Moses in verses 23 through 29. Hebrews 11, verses 23 through 29. This is found on page 1382 of the Bibles provided there in your rows. The author of Hebrews, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, writes, "By faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's command. By faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians, attempting to do so, were drowned." Thus far the reading of God's holy word. Remember, the grass withers and the flower falls, but God's word abides forever. Amen. This morning we've had opportunity to witness a baptism where another family in the congregation has presented their child in order to receive the sign and seal of the covenant. And as families do this, I know, as for example, when my family did this a month ago or so, there's a sense in which you celebrate because God has provided you this little one, and you are in awe of the privilege and the opportunity to see another one in your home. But at some point, whether it's leading up to the time of the birth, or it's after the birth, or it's bringing the baby home and dealing with the sleepless nights and the change in your family from none to one, or one to two, or two to three, or three to four. Do we have anyone here who has more than that? I think you get the picture. You go from the sense of celebration to a sense of question. What in the world was I thinking? How in the world did we get here? Honey, don't answer that. A sense of challenge. What in the world are we supposed to do with this little one? Maybe even a sense of fear. The fear of responsibility, the fear of the world in which they're growing up in, and what will then happen. And yet, I think that this passage here speaks to parents in order to encourage them and strengthen them to stand on the promises of God. But this passage doesn't just speak to parents. I think it speaks to us all. You see an individual. You see individuals who are in trying circumstances, dealing with challenges, dealing with hardships, situations that have changed in their life. And from that, greater and bigger and more difficult things coming about. And they have a sense of wonder and a sense of fear. And yet we see also then an opportunity to have strength and to have hope. And so this morning, as we consider another aspect of faith, I think we want to see here how faith stands on the promises of God. Faith stands on the promises of God. And we want to see this in the life of Moses' parents, as well as in the life of Moses. We'll see this in a few different ways. The first way is that faith, when it stands on the promises of God, realizes that those promises must be foundational to the one's life. And then as the individual stands on those foundational promises, that one realizes then that there is a cost or a commitment. And then lastly, we see how, as the individual is standing on the promises, God then carries them out in the life of His children. So firstly, we want to see simply how it's foundational. Look in verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's commandments. The author here cites Moses. He does so in a very practical way. The audience that he's writing to was thinking to themselves that the place for them to go was to leave Christianity, leave their Christian faith, and as a result, end back up in their practice of Judaism. They wanted to do so because they were being persecuted for their faith. They were realizing that Christianity was a religion of cost. It was a religion of commitment. It was a religion of challenge. And therefore, they couldn't simply slide by as they identified themselves as the followers of Jesus Christ. They were harassed. They were troubled. They went through all sorts of hard times. And they thought to themselves, you know, we didn't have to go through this when we identified ourselves as Jews. So let's go back and follow that. The author here then shows his audience how those who have embraced Jesus Christ with a true and living faith will not seek to abandon Him or leave Him. And in fact, they have no reason to doubt or become discouraged because God will provide them with the grace and strength in order to follow after His people. And in this chapter 11, the author then cites all sorts of Old Testament Israel examples to show that those who were a part of Judaism leading up to Christ were individuals who were not there by works, but by faith, by a belief. And so he does so then of all individuals in the life of the one who God used to give the law, the very law that this audience treasured and followed after and sought to go back to. Moses, we are told, had the outworking of faith brought forth in his life at a very early age. It probably would be better to note that it is the faith of Moses' parents brought out here. For really, what kind of faith can a one-month-old or two-month-old or even a three-month-old have? And so we see then that these parents heard what was happening. They observed the situation. Situation is this. This is the time, roughly 400 years after God had promised to Abraham that he would give him a land, he would give him a name, and he would give him descendants. He had given him Abraham, or to Abraham he had given Isaac, and to Isaac then he had given Jacob. And through Jacob then, 12 sons. These 12 sons, due to famine, a severe famine, all ended up in the land of Egypt. And there they dwelt for roughly 200 years, from the death of Joseph until the time of Moses. For a while they lived under favorable conditions. Situation was good. Things were plenty. They were still identified with Joseph and therefore honored because Joseph had played a significant part in the life of Egypt. But someone had arisen who didn't know Joseph and had not remembered the things that God had done through Joseph. And instead he saw this nation within Egypt that was then beginning to develop, that was growing, that was gaining number, size, strength. And he feared, what happens when this people arises and overtakes us, and Egypt then becomes theirs? So he decides that what should then happen is eliminate all the male children, throw them into the Nile, drown them. The benefit is such that you then only have a generation of girls that arise, become women, needing to then be married, have families, and they then have to marry the Egyptians and become a part of the nation of Egypt. These slaves slavishly obeyed and followed after the call of Pharaoh, except one family. Moses' family. The parents knew the promises of God, that God had promised to Abraham that there would be this time even as they were going through, and yet God would raise up one who would overcome, deliver, and bring about the fulfillment of what he had promised to Abraham by taking his descendants and putting them smack dab in the very land that he said to Abraham that he would give. These parents believed this. They had a foundational position in their life that said, no matter what anyone else is saying, we will hear, abide, and trust in the call and the commandments of the will of God. Now, while this was happening, God then blesses them with this little one, Moses. And after he is born, they look upon him and they say there's something that's unique about him. There's something different. Stephen tells us he was a goodly child. There was something exceptional about him that caused the parents to say, maybe this is the one that God has provided to be our deliverer. And so we cannot then follow after the commandments of the king. We will keep him. Well, if anyone knows anything about infants, you can keep them quiet for a while as they then just sleep. But as they get older, the sleeping gives way to time being awake. And time being awake gives time to, I'm hungry and I want to be changed and I want attention. And I let it be known that I want these things by my voice, in particular by my cries. The parents could not hide the baby any longer. And so as a result, with the hopes of the blessing of God, they build a basket and release this little one into the Nile River. Well, it just so happens that in the providence of God, the one that finds this little one is the daughter of Pharaoh, who takes compassion and sympathy on the baby and makes this little one her very own. Those of you who know the story know that Moses' sister Miriam was hiding in the reed. She saw this action take place. She immediately ran up to Pharaoh's daughter and said, "I can find a nurse for you to take care of this little one." And the daughter said, "That would be great." And so therefore Miriam went and found the baby's mom to then take care of this little one. Moses' parents understood that even as God had given this little one into their care, that they had the responsibility to allow this one to be born, to not follow after the command of the king, no matter the threats, no matter what was set before them, and to trust that God would guide and direct them accordingly, as they heard what God had revealed in His Word, and sought to abide and follow after it accordingly. Now we as parents this morning aren't facing the challenge of the king telling us that we have to go throw our babies into the river. Yet. Who knows if we will ever have that. But there are times in which we deal with circumstances as parents and we become overwhelmed. We might even become discouraged. We might even ask ourselves, how in the world are we going to be able to follow through with what's before us? And these individuals said, it's rooted in the revelation and promise of the living God. And there they took hope, and there they took comfort, and there they took direction. And there they lived their lives. After getting the blessing then of having Moses back into their home, now as the adopted child of Pharaoh, they then took opportunity to lead and instruct their little one in the faith. You see, as we move forward, we understand that Moses had an understanding of Israel and Egypt, and we see that Moses sided with Israel and not Egypt. How was he able to do that if he grew up in the home of Pharaoh? How did he understand these things if he was trained and brought up in the wisdom and education system of Egypt? It was because when he was nursed by his mom and lived with his dad, and dwelt under the same roof with Aaron and Miriam, that he heard day after day the promise of God that God would deliver His people. It's possible that they even told Moses of the exceptional circumstances of his birth, and with the hope and confidence that he would then be the one that would lead and deliver Israel. Their foundation rested in the promises of God, and they directed their little ones accordingly each and every day. Parents, as you fear, parents, as you become overwhelmed, parents, as you feel challenged, moms and dads, as you look at sometimes wonder, what in the world are we even doing? Don't fail to lose sight of the foundation of your faith as revealed in the Word of God that directs you and your children to look to the promises of God ultimately brought out in Christ. But does that really work? Is that really effective? Is that useful? Is that helpful? I mean, does that make really good sense? Let's see what happens in terms of Moses. By faith, when he became of age, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. Sounds to me like that did make sense. And this was simply through a time, I believe, in his life from roughly birth to maybe 6 years of age. 6 years he was instructed. 6 years he was directed. For a period of time, early on in his life, his parents taught him and trained him and directed him to where his foundation should be. So that we then see, as he grew up, he realized the cost and commitment of faith, and he followed through with a godly choice as opposed to a wicked one. Now, we read from Acts chapter 7 that Stephen tells us that Moses was about 40 years of age. I'm not sure to be encouraged by this or discouraged by this. Because then as you look at your children and realize they don't come to age until they're 40, oh boy. Or it explains a lot. Interestingly enough, Moses' life is divided into 40s. 40 he comes of age and leaves. For 40 years he's in the wilderness. For 40 years he then leads Israel. The point is this. Instructed at an early age, having opportunity to eventually show the fruition of that instruction. Think about what Moses had. He had honor. He had success. The rule in Egypt was that the line of succession actually passed through the daughter to then the son. It's very possible that Moses was next in line in order to be seated as the Pharaoh of Egypt. He had a tremendous blessing of the place in which he lived. He had the best education. He could have anything and everything he wanted in relation to his culture, his education, his wealth. Any question that was raised would be answered by the one who could do so. Any desire would then be fulfilled. And Moses then, when he's at this point in his life, he evaluates his life and he says, all of this is nice, but there's something that's far better. There's something that's far greater. There's something more to be desired, to look after, to seek. And he says that reward is to be identified with God's people. Notice here is the transition that he would rather suffer in this world with the people of God than to have pleasure and prosperity and ease in this world in order than to suffer in the next under the hand of God. He would rather suffer affliction by the hand of men than to endure the eternal wrath by the hand of God after this life. And so he realizes then that he will go and follow after the way of the Lord and identify himself with the people of God. Notice this identity is not one of ease. It's not one of comfort. It's not one of pleasure. It's hard. It's difficult. Jesus says that the challenge of discipleship is that if anyone were to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and so seek me. The prophet Jeremiah notes, why is it that the way of the treacherous is full of prosperity and easy? The psalmist asks the question, look at the ease of the wicked, it's vain to be pure. The challenge that is set before us as we live in this world is to see that oftentimes our friends who do not know the Lord, individuals who do not seek to serve Christ as King, those who have no recognition and no thought for Christianity, seem to have a time where they don't have it hard. They don't have it difficult. Their life goes well. Their bank accounts are plush. They're always getting the promotion. Their kids do the best. They're the most successful. They have all the talent. They have all the ability. They have all the success. And here we are, puttering along our way, dealing with who knows what. And so it's very easy then to go, why? What's the point? It would be very comfortable to have that pleasure, to give in for the moment, to receive that enjoyment, to not have to suffer. But Moses understood that sin is a cruel mistress. Oh, she comes along and she'll set herself up in such a way that her drink is cool and refreshing and pleasant, but the aftertaste is rough and hard and bitter. Her drink goes down smooth and well, but as you then begin to digest it, you don't feel so good. And your stomach is upset. And you want to get sick. And yet you're ensnared and you're enticed and you only want to drink again and again and again. But not so with Christ. Christ, yes, calls us to a challenging way. It's costly in terms of dwelling in the commitment of faith. But Moses understood that the reproach, the suffering with God's people and suffering for the Lord, has something that is far greater. As the hymn sets before us, I'd rather have Jesus than anything this world can give. And it goes through and it talks about then, you know, to be the king over all the earth and to gain all sorts of riches and treasures and have all sorts of things which in the end amount to nothing in the extent of the grand scheme of God's plan and purposes. Moses had an eye towards the promised one. For Jesus assures us that Abraham rejoiced to see his day. Moses wrote of this prophet who would come, the great prophet that would reveal the truth and lead all in righteousness. Peter celebrates the fact that Moses saw Christ and was glad. Stephen drew attention to that as well. Moses understood that to be identified among those people who were enslaved and who were dealing with the struggles of Egypt, that although they had that hardship, they were the blessed of God, and God would effectively work in their life to give them an eternal security and an eternal hope. And he said, "That's my desire." Do you understand the cost and commitment of faith this morning? What's enticing you? What's setting itself alongside of that commitment that's causing you to say Christ and, or causing you to say this instead of Christ? The Apostle Paul notes that he counted everything that he gained loss, that he might then be able to gain and ascertain the greatness of Christ. Maybe for some of you, you don't want to give up your name or reputation because you like the attention that it gives. Maybe for some, it's going to be too costly in terms of your wallet, or it's going to mean a lifestyle change, or it's going to mean that you have to finally submit yourself to a hard and difficult call that God has set in your life from an early age until now. It might mean that you have to endure some time of hardship or affliction or persecution. But listen to what your Lord assures you of. That He identifies as one of you. And therefore, as you suffer, He then suffers along with you. For you are bone of His bone and flesh of His flesh. He notes that in affliction, He is afflicted, the prophet Isaiah tells us. And when reproaches have fallen on you, the psalmist prophetically says they fall on Him. Moses, in thinking through this, deliberated. It wasn't a quick choice. He waited out. He gave some careful thought to it. And yet he embraced it. I'm not encouraging you, in light of hearing this, to then begin to make your list and say, oh, as of this day and at this time, here it is. Maybe some of you can. But in the end, when you weigh everything that is before you and you compare it to Christ, what can be better? What can be greater? What can be more valuable Jesus asked it this way: what can you gain in this world that won't then end up costing you your soul? You see, if you do not know Him, if you are not committed to Him by a true and living faith, if you don't understand the fact that God will only receive you through His well-beloved Son, Jesus Christ. He only receives you through Him because He is the perfect one. He is the righteous one. He has met all the demands that the Father has set upon all of us that we cannot meet, that we cannot fulfill, that we cannot do. Yet Christ has. And He says, if you stand on your own, it's a way of misery and condemnation. But if you stand in My Son, Jesus Christ, it's a way of hope and certainty, even though it's a way of costly commitment. May it be that you would be able to say with the hymn writer, "My Jesus, I love Thee," because you understand the cost commitment that is set before you in light of all that Christ has sacrificed on your behalf. We lastly see that faith then is carried out. It's carried out in the fact that He esteemed the reproaches of Christ as greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. But lastly then, He carried it out. How so? By faith He forsook Egypt. He didn't fear the wrath of the king. He endured as seeing Him who is invisible. He kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest He who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians, attempting to do so, were drowned. What does all this mean? It means that Moses carried out his faith. How so? Well, we're told that he left Egypt. In terms of his leaving Egypt, he basically said, "I'm done here. I have no more attachment. This isn't for me. I'm gone." As he identified with the people of God, he realized that he then could no longer be a part of them. And so he fled. We also see that there's a second time in which Moses left Egypt, and that's when he carried out the children of Israel through the Red Sea and they crossed on dry land. What do we see? He left Pharaoh. He said, "Your life, your house is of no value to me, and therefore I'm no longer attached to you. Not only am I no longer attached to you, I'm not even going to stay with you. I'm gone. I'm done." The king, after he had heard about the instance in which Moses had killed one of his servants, put a bounty out on his life. The author of Hebrews makes it clear he didn't fear. It didn't have significance on him. Why? Because he understood that he saw something that was far greater. He had a far stronger conviction. His conviction was in the living God, who was not simply ruler over a particular land, but was ruler over the entire world, the heaven and earth, and all that it contains. He didn't give in to any point of fear or threatening. He lived out the principle as found in Hebrews chapter 13, when the author there says, "Let your conduct be without covetousness, be content with such things as you have, for He Himself has said, 'I will never leave you nor forsake you.' So we may boldly say, 'The Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me?'" Moses clearly understood that as he had his commitment of faith founded upon the promises of God, that he carried it out, even willing to not only forsake all, but tell Pharaoh that his life was of no value and his power had no effect on him. As he left, he didn't turn back. He renounced permanently the house of Egypt. He left all to follow the Lord. He didn't look back. He was uncompromising in his commitment. It could have been very easy, even after the 40 years in the wilderness, to come back and deal with Israel and see the ragtag band that he had in order to lead out, to say, you know, Pharaoh, on second thought, I think I kind of like your way better. But instead, he said, the Lord is my light and my salvation. As the psalmist says in Psalm 27:1, what shall I fear? The Lord is the defense of my life. What shall I dread? How did he show this? Not only did he leave, he kept the Passover. Remember, the Passover was the 10th plague. In the 10th plague, the angel of death would go through the land. Anyone who did not have blood sprinkled over their doorposts, they then would be killed. The firstborn would. How did he understand that? Only by the word of the Lord, who said, I'm going to do this. Had God ever done this before? No. Had he ever shown the way of escape before? No. And yet, what did Moses do? He heard and he believed, because he feared that which was unseen and abided by him, as opposed to fearing the Pharaoh. The children of Israel clothed themselves how? Ready to leave in a moment's notice. They were dressed with their sandals, with their traveling cloaks on, so that after the firstborn passed through and had wiped, or the angel of death had passed through and wiped out all the firstborn sons in the land of Egypt, and Pharaoh then had said, you may go. So Israel then left on their way, receiving the riches and the plunder of Egypt, and headed their way towards the promise of the land of promise, by the way of the Red Sea, where what happened? The Egyptians came back through and had entrapped them. And yet Moses again shows his commitment and carries it out by what? Stand back and wait and see what the Lord will do. In all of this, he accepted God's provision. He accepted what God had brought out, because he understood, he saw, he had seen that God was faithful to him in his birth. He was faithful to him in his upbringing. He was faithful to him in his departure. He was faithful to him in the wilderness. He was faithful to him as he led Israel up to this point. And he knew that God would continue to do so. God would not change his mind. God would not forget him. And therefore, he would not forget his Lord, but carry through with confidence and trust. Again, dear church member, Moses sets for us an example, not lived out in some life of ease and comfort, but in excitement, in threat, in challenge, in difficulty. And yet he had a living faith. This faith is no different than what the Lord has given to you through Christ. Do you stand on the promises? Have you committed yourself to the Lord of those promises? And do you carry this through? We started at the beginning thinking about parents and the challenges and the fear and the dread that comes before them. And yet, isn't it amazing to think that you have the life of Moses lived out for 120 years, who did mighty things, amazing things by the hand of the Lord, and yet it was all directed through 6 years of training at the very beginning of his life. The Lord has given us as parents a tremendous privilege, a great opportunity, as well as a serious commitment to take His little ones and lead them in a useful manner, in a purposeful manner, even in a manner of hope. With the stories that come before us that assure us that as the Lord blesses that, you then see a heart commitment, and you see that heart commitment carried out in practical living, resting, seeing that which is invisible. And so I encourage you, Teague and April, as well as all of our parents, to not belittle the faith that has been given to you, that has been committed to you, to be brought to the next generation. I'm not saying that this is a magic formula or a magic pill, and that if you just follow these steps, it all carries through. But it does at least give us hope, purpose, significance, encouragement. It does so not only by way of being parents, but simply as individuals who understand, who believe, who love their Lord, and who seek to glorify Him in all we think, do, and say. May God encourage us as we stand on the promises, and in so doing, may He bless those steps accordingly.